Welcome to another edition of Strategic Planning for Business Owners. My name is Steve Young. I am a Senior Vice President at UBS. I lead a team known as the Business Transition Consultants, and we advise clients on mostly middle market, closely held companies and their owners on various aspects of wealth management as they grow and eventually exit from their business. Today, we're going to be speaking with a special guest, Chris Blees from the firm of Biggs Cofer. Chris is a CPA and valuation specialist. He's known around the country for topics relating to valuation and business transition work with his clients. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Glad you could make it. I had an opportunity to meet Chris through a class I took through the Alliance of Mergers and Acquisition Advisors back in the spring of 2023. And Chris, I was very impressed with your presentations and really impressed when we got on the topic of valuations. And since valuation is kind of the central point for owners in transition, I think it's a very important topic for our listeners to learn about today. As we get through the conversation, I was hoping that maybe we could start out with the definition of valuation and how it has different meanings depending on the context of the conversation. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I think
Thank you.
Thanks for asking. That's a great question because I think a lot of business owners get exposed to the concept of valuation through the operation of their business and the ownership of their business. Oftentimes, business owners' first experience with valuation is perhaps through some estate planning or maybe through, unfortunately, maybe a divorce in their family or some other reasons that they are
doing some gifting. All those reasons that business owners might get their business valued, and they do so through what has become an industry called the business valuation industry. And those business valuation experts are purposed with presenting an opinion of value, giving those business owners a valuation that is used, if you really think about it, for theoretical purposes. None of those purposes, estate planning, estate taxes, gifting, insurance claims, divorce, none of those purposes actually result in a buyer actually buying an interest in that business. In all those cases, they are essentially theoretical values. So that's the reality is that most business owners go through their operating and ownership period perhaps only being exposed to that type of valuation, which is different than the valuation that is used by real buyers in the marketplace when that company, maybe that same company, decides to go to market, sell the company. And so there are a lot of commonalities if you get into the technical details, but at a high level, it's important to understand that the reason for the valuation does dictate a different outcome. And those differences aren't minor, by the way. And even when you get into the transactional value world, I usually refer to those as different worlds. You know, there's different purpose for them, but they have different approaches, they have different calculations, and ultimately the end result is very different. So even when you look in the transaction world, that the valuations that occur there can be quite varied. And that's often a surprise to business owners when they actually get into a transaction. They start to see offers that come from different buyers. And they're often surprised because the valuation can be so different from one buyer to the next for the same company, same point in time.
Chris, last time we spoke, you shared an example of a client you worked with a while back that had received a valuation from a number of different buyers. And the valuation... Well, the valuation you guys did as a valuation engagement was X, and then the offers were coming in were like standard deviations to the left and standard deviations to the right. I think that would be kind of an interesting conversation if you don't mind sharing a little bit about that.
Yeah. And what's interesting is this is it's a interesting case study, but it's also very typical. And so when I describe this to other business owners and to kind of highlight the variations in value that come out in the real world, in the real transactional world. So the example was, in this case, the client was considering a sale and they thought they might want to get a valuation opinion, you know, again, much like those theoretical values that are done. And that valuation opinion came in around $15 million. And so that company thought, okay, that's probably what we ought to expect when we go to market and we see buyers come in with their offers. But the reality was quite different. They did, in fact, get a valuation offer for somewhere around $15 million, but they also got a couple down as low as $7 million, and they also ended up with ones as high as $22 million, I believe, was kind of the highest valuation range that they got. And so aside from the fact that they actually averaged about $15 million, so the theoretical valuation that came in was correct for one buyer and was the average of all buyers. But what was really surprising to the owner was the variety and the standard deviation, right? And that difference from seven on the floor to 22 million on the upper end. I think going into the process, if you had asked that business owner, he was thinking maybe, okay, maybe it's low end of 14, maybe high end of 16. And the reality was quite a broader grouping of offers.
And I get the sense that this is a more common occurrence than not. Would you agree?
It is. And in my career, I've sort of developed my own terminology for that variation. I call it value relativity. And what that is intended to mean is that the valuation is relative to the type of transaction that you're doing. And equally important is the type of buyer that is evaluating the offer. And so to establish this idea that a business is worth one number to all parties in all circumstances, you know, when you really start to unwind that concept, most business owners start to nod their head and say, yeah, that makes sense. And yet going into the process, they don't really think about that value relativity concept. You know, but so to give some examples, if you were to sell 100% of your business and walk away as a business owner versus if you're selling a minority interest to an investor who might be going along for the ride, but you're going to continue to work in the business and run the business, those two different transactions might necessitate a very different value for the whole company. Obviously the percentage, a minority percentage is going to be a lower value than 100%, but I'm just talking about the 100% value of the company in those two transactions is probably very different. Likewise, if you apply a different type of buyer, if you take a buyer who is a pure investment buyer, again, maybe it's a private equity group or an individual investor that doesn't bring any synergies, doesn't bring any added value, any knowledge of the industry, they're just bringing money to the table. That particular buyer may not be in a position to, they're not motivated, number one, to overpay because they need a particular rate of return and they can't influence that rate of return. Whereas you might get a strategic buyer who has deep industry knowledge, might even be able to provide some synergies to the business in the form of reduced costs or access to new customers and so on. And that buyer, not only are they capable of improving the return, their own return, but they are willing to probably pay up for that opportunity. And so the valuation to them is far greater than the valuation to that pure financial investor. And again, those, if you combine those two concepts, the nature of the transaction and the type of buyer, and then you overlay that on the same business at the same point in time, it's no wonder that you can end up with these very different valuations from $7 million to $22 million for the same company on the same day.
Yes, very interesting dilemma too for the business owner to consider, because in their mind, they're thinking, hey, everybody's looking at the same data. Everybody should, you know, plug it into the same calculations and come out with the same information at the other end. And that's not necessarily the case. And I think that's one thing that a lot of the clients we talk to mostly are closely held or family-owned companies that peg a number to the value of that company. And in their mind, whether they've done the calculations with their CPA or hired a firm to come in and appraise the company, they have a number in mind and they're thinking, well, if somebody offers me X for my business relative to this number, whether it's higher or lower, that might determine whether or not I'm willing to sell the company. But really, what we're really hearing here is there's a range. There's really not a number, right? So valuation kind of gets us in the range of where we should be, as opposed to pinpointing a specific number for the business. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, of course. And I would always recommend that business owners, for their own education, that they should have an understanding of the approximate value or the value range of their business. By no means am I saying you should just think that the valuation of your business is such a wild number that there's no point in trying to estimate it. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I think that good business owners should understand what are those value metrics. But when it comes to actually executing on a sale, it is very different than selling your house or selling a piece of real estate or selling a lot of other things that business owners maybe have been accustomed to selling, and they apply those theories to the sale of their business, and they're going to miss the boat, right? And so the approach is not to first understand what your business is worth and then go find someone who's willing to pay that price. Instead, the other approach ought to be flip that around and say, you know, let's understand what possible value range is out there and what drives that value range. And then the idea is let's go try and find a buyer who appreciates this business the most and is willing to pay the most, therefore, for what this company is. And as soon as you start to view that, you start to understand, that's the way I maximize value when I go through an actual transaction. I don't maximize value by setting a fixed number and waiting for the first person to pay that price. I maximize value if I really understand what buyers are looking for and then go chase after the buyers that will appreciate your business the most. That's the idea behind the difference between transactional value and all this other theoretical value world.
That makes a lot of sense, and I really appreciate that perspective. Speaking of maximizing value, I know there's a number of things that owners can be doing to increase the value of their company. Some of them are actually doing it. Some of them aren't. Some of them are doing it by default. What are some of the kind of the triggers you've seen in your experience that are really good value added for the company valuation?
Yeah. So, you know, when you boil down simply, right, I can tell you that valuation is, in its simplest form, it's two factors. Right. It is the earnings capacity of the business. And by the way, what buyers are buying is the future earnings capacity of the business, not the historical. Most business owners get caught up in this idea that the value of their business is what they made last year or the average earnings over the history of the business times some multiple. You know, the reality is the buyers aren't buying your history. They're buying your future. The reason that we as valuation experts and in the industry, we tend to use historical numbers is because these are private companies that don't know the future. You can't predict the future. So history is our best predictor of the future, but ultimately that's what we're trying to get to when we use historical numbers. So the first thing to understand is sustainable earnings is really the key here, and sustainable future earnings is what we're really shooting for. But nonetheless, it's earnings and either times some multiple, or the other way you can get to the same math is divided by some discount rate. And by the way, those are synonymous for one another. There's a mathematical conversion. A 5 multiple is just a 20% discount rate. So, you know, 1/5 is 20%. So that's the simple conversion. But either way, you have these two factors. You have an earnings factor, and you have a rate of return or a discount factor. And that rate of return or discount factor is really a risk analysis of the company. So the less risk there is, the higher the multiple, the more risk, the lower the multiple. If you boil it down to those very simple things, you can advise a business owner to say, okay, so here are the two things that you can do to maximize the value of your company. Provide greater sustainable earnings, number one, and number two, reduce risk. And so if you could sit down with a business owner and you have this conversation, and you almost have a chuckle with your business owner when you say, so what I want you to do is I want you to be more profitable. Yep. Right? And most business owners will laugh at you and say, oh, you mean that's a new idea. I've never thought of that before, right?
Not so only that, course, but do it in a less risky manner, right?
Right. And so of course, the idea of being more profitable is sort of inherent in all of us. So that part I kind of brush over because, you know, the reality is business owners spend their entire life trying to be more profitable. And so trying to prepare yourself for sale by saying, just be more profitable. It's like, well, what do you think I've been doing for 20 years? Right. Mm-hmm. So of course that one, you know, I sort of say, you know, the owners are taking care of that one on their own. It's the de-risking the business that is where you can move the needle. And this is where you get the variations in value, by the way. You know, in my example, that business and all those buyers were evaluating the same business with the same earnings capability. And so why is it that one of them came up with a $7 million valuation and one $22 million? The difference was the multiple. The difference was that risk assessment. And each of them were assessing it differently. Obviously, the high valuation was assessing a much lower risk and vice versa on the low end. So really, if you want to talk to a business owner about improving their valuation, again, assuming they're already working on profitability, then the things they can move the needle on are de-risking the business. And when you talk about de-risking the business, the next logical question is de-risking it for whom? Because if you de-risk it for yourself, and that's most business owners think on a daily basis, is I am de-risking the business for me because I'm the owner. But when you think about going into a transaction, when you think about selling your business, you really should be de-risking it for the potential buyer. And those may be different, right? So for a business owner, and you can go through this all the time with business owners and say, you know, why did you make this business decision? Why did you decide to only hire in-house salespeople versus outside salespeople? And, or why did you decide to only open two locations, you know, on that side of town versus six locations? And all of these different questions you can ask a business owner, most of the time they're going to say, it's because that's what I wanted to do. It was de-risking the business for me. It was making it more enjoyable for me to own it. And that's fine. Of course, that's wonderful. But when you start thinking about, well, what would a buyer want? Maybe your decision-making changes. And so when you talk about making different decisions about how to position your business for sale, you really have to start thinking about, well, what would a buyer want? And it's different than what I might want. And that's how you start to position your business for sale. Some of those things can be done quickly, but some of them might take a few years. So that's the kind of process that business owners ought to be thinking about.
Yeah, that's really some good information. I think a lot of times you're spot on with the fact that a lot of business owners are looking at that company from their perspective and not necessarily the perspective of a third party that might be interested in purchasing them at some point in the future. And I think keeping that as a focal point as they look out into the future and trying to figure out how do I maximize value in the potential transaction sometime in the future, what are the things that a potential buyer is going to be looking at from their perspective that's going to make my company more valuable and maybe not so much from my perspective? So that's key. And I guess in keeping with that, I'm sure there's a number of things you've seen along the way that owners are doing, maybe subconsciously, maybe not thinking about it, but are in effect detracting from the value of their business. There are a couple examples.
A couple common ones, and these are, you know, these are very common. And when I talk, you talk to business owners about, I'll give you two examples. And in each of these examples, these are the business decisions that the owner can honestly say, this is the way I want to run the business. This is a more pleasurable way or a more, in their minds, less risky way of running the business. And yet to the outside world, it looks exactly the opposite. And so here are the two examples. The two examples are, number one, concentration of customer. Oftentimes, you'll see a business owner that hits that vein of gold with a really successful customer. And when they have a good, deep relationship with a customer, they sell them lots of products or services, and they continue to go deeper and deeper into that customer, and they divert resources, they divert their production or their services or your sales efforts all towards this one customer, because to them, there's comfort in that customer. They know them. They feel very comfortable with them. They know that they pay their bills on time. They have a great relationship, et cetera, et cetera. And so next thing you know, they have developed a business that has a pretty sizable concentration, maybe in one or two or three customers. And that concentration feels very good to the owner. They're very comfortable in that. That is de-risked for them. A buyer comes in and looks at that exactly the opposite. They look at that and say, what if we lose one of those customers? Mm-hmm. And so immediately that company is devalued. That company immediately is devalued in the eyes of a buyer. And so there's a perfect example of one where many business owners feel better and better about it because, you know, the next sale to that customer is easy and it's profitable and they enjoy the relationship and it's, and so on. So anyway, that's one example. The next example is in terms of management. And oftentimes business owners, many business owners are type A personalities. These people love to control their organization. And so they create an organization that reports many times, almost too many people report straight to that owner, and that owner that is also the president, CEO. And what they fail to do is to develop independent decision makers within the organization. And again, the business owner does that because it's their comfort zone. They feel very comfortable. They know what's going on in all parts of their business. To them, that is a much less risky proposition than I'm going to just turn over sales to a sales vice president, or I'm going to turn over all of my IT to a CTO, or all my operations, you know, I'm going to turn over to a COO, and I'm not going to know what's going on in the plant. And a typical business owner looks at that and is frightened by that concept. And they think that's taking tremendous risk to put that kind of authority into different people. And so they retain a lot of that, and they don't develop those C-suite employees reporting to them. A buyer, again, comes in and looks at that exactly the opposite, right? The buyer looks at that and says, well, I'm going to retire you, and you're going to go off to the beach, and I'm going to be left trying to manage all these things or hiring people to do all these things. And that's a risky proposition to the buyer. So those are two perfect examples of decisions that business owners make for their own purpose, which is, makes perfect sense for themselves. And if they're going to continue to own it forever, then that's great. But if you're going to sell your business, you have to realize that those decisions are actually devaluing the business.
Those are great examples. And I can, as you're going through those examples, I can visually see some of the conversations I've had in the past with owners that just were thinking exactly the same way. Having concentrated clients is good from a profitability standpoint, from an efficiency standpoint, because they don't have to continue to spend more money to develop those relationships that are already there. But on the flip side, if you're looking at buying that company, even in my past career as a lender to these businesses, that was a concern we had as well, is if that client went away, or if for whatever reason that company is purchased by another party and then the original owner is gone and that relationship might leave with that owner, that's very, very challenging for somebody to get their hands wrapped around. So Chris, you've given us a lot of good information, a lot of things to think about. Just looking at some of my notes through the conversation, I like your term, and I think you used, was it relative valuation? Is that the term you used?
Yeah, I call it value relativity.
There you go, relativity.
It's sort of like Einstein's theory of relativity.
I like that. And basically that's saying, hey, look, you know, the value of your company is relevant to the person that's looking at it, and they all have different agendas and different metrics. I mean, sure, the numbers are going to do what the numbers do, but then the interpretation of those numbers and how they actually fit into the agenda of the potential buyer or the user of that valuation information is going to be quite different. And I really appreciate you sharing that one example, because that really kind of drove the nail in on that topic there. And then de-risking the company is another key driver there. So other than those two highlights of my notes here, as we wrap up, anything else specifically you want to highlight before we come to close here this afternoon?
Yeah, I do think it's important. As I said, it business owners should think about the value of their company. They should understand what buyers are going to, how they're going to interpret the company that they've built. And it's going to be different than the way that the owner interprets the company they've built. So just knowing that there are buyers out there that are assessing their business using different metrics than what the owner themselves may be thinking, that's a great first step. Talk to real transaction advisors about how buyers in their industry are looking at value, and then position the company so that you are making business decisions that will be rewarded by the buyer, not just rewarding to you personally when you're ready to sell, right? And if you don't if you're not ready to sell right away, then by all means, run the business the way you want to run the business and enjoy your ownership.
Great points, Chris. And again, thank you for spending some time with us on today's podcast. And I also want to thank everybody that tuned in today to listen to this podcast and appreciate any questions you might have regarding the content of this podcast or anything that's of relevance to the subject of running your company or trying to maximize your value as you go through that process. So you can reach out to me directly. If you have questions for myself or for Chris, reach out to me directly and we'll make sure we get them answered for you. If you need to get in contact with Chris, we can also make that happen. My number is 317-816-1830. And you can always email me. My email address is Steven, steven.young, Y-O-U-N-G, at ubs.com. And with that, I want to thank you again, Chris, for joining us. And also thank everybody for tuning in and have a great day.
Thank you, Steve.